Hello and welcome. That was Farms in Trouble with their song Like a Needle in Heaven. My name is Dom and you're listening to Letters From, a new podcast from Rise Up Radio. This first show will focus upon the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the American Midwest. A city best known to me, at least, as the city of Joseph McCarthy, frozen yogurt, and breweries. We'll be talking to Eric Sperling from the Progressive Students of Milwaukee, who will introduce us to many of the local political activist projects within the city, as well as talking to us about his organisation's work towards stopping the war in Iraq. We'll then speak to Rosemary Harris of the 95 National Association of Working Women about the importance of paid sick days, equal pay, and the position of women in the workforce. Ursula from the campaign group Good Jobs, Livable Neighbourhoods will then be joining us to discuss the effects of urban degeneration on those living in the Milwaukee inner city, and what can and is being done to offset those effects. Finally, I'll be talking to Mike Hellebeck of Peace Action, who will continue the discussion of the Stop the War efforts taking place in Milwaukee and talking about the war moratorium. All of this will be joined by a variety of music from Milwaukee, all of which has been kindly chosen for us by our first guest, Jeb Evan, from the band Dear Astronaut. I'll be talking to him after this track. It's by a band called Partisan, and the song is called Antlers Wear His Crown.
Many people grow alone, I know. One was lost in the wild. His prints signal fire. So
Dominic, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly, yes. How's it going
now? All right. Fantastic.
Superb. Well, obviously, this is the first show I've been doing, and I'm focusing on Milwaukee, and that's in part because of you and because of my time over there, and got such a good sense of community spirit in Milwaukee, at least the parts I was shown to it. I was hoping you could sort of give us a little gist of, you know, why Milwaukee is such a great town, a great city.
Well, because I'm here mostly. Milwaukee's a great city. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, it's because of the working class roots and that sort of thing, and I think that's true. But I mean, there's also a lot of really great stuff going on here. You know, there's a really good punk and hardcore scene, basement scene. There's a hip hop scene, which unfortunately I don't know as much about as I, you know, would like to. But you know, that seems to be, you know, pretty strong. You know, there's arts. We have the, you know, Milwaukee Art Museum, which is a pretty big deal. The smaller galleries, stuff like that. You know, also we have like 8 billion bars, and we make tons of beer here. So I think the factor. You know, you factor in the level of functioning alcoholism, that really kind of says a lot about how great Milwaukee is.
Okay. Well, I know you haven't been there all your life, but since you've been there, you've been very much a part of the musical community, and like you mentioned before, the hardcore and punk scene are part of that. Could you give us a little bit of information about how you got involved and sort of your beginnings in Milwaukee?
I moved down here because I had some friends here, and because I was going to be going to school. Knew some folks through the internet, actually, that been part of the Wisconsin, you know, punk and hardcore and underground scene, you know, for some time. And, you know, met up with them and became better friends with them and got involved with some of the stuff they were doing. I had a couple friends who were living in this house called the Breakfast Nook, where they would do shows, and I became friends with more and more people who were doing shows at their houses and setting up shows at bars and stuff like that. And I was, for a while I was doing basement shows at a house that I lived in called the Dandelion's House, which were, you know, low-key acoustic sort of shows. At that time, my band was just me with an acoustic guitar, so, you know, did a lot of that sort of thing, was sort of involved with that scene a little bit, while at the same time being, you know, going to dirty punk rock and hardcore and, like, garage rock shows and stuff like that.
Okay. When I was there with you, you took me to a basement show, and a basement show isn't something that's is that popular over in England, but it's very much an integral part of underground music in Milwaukee, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say, you know, throughout a good portion of the United States, you know, basement shows have been kind of the foundation of hardcore. As far back as, you know, the early 80s, you know, when you had, you know, bands like Black Flag, you know, going on their first tours, you know, there's a lot of house shows and VFW halls and things like that. You know, it's just a very much, you know, I mean, I guess that's part of punk rock, the sort of do-it-yourself aesthetic and just kind of, you know, saying like, you know, we don't need booking agents, we don't need managers and, you know, all these other people to set stuff up for it. Us, we're going to do it ourselves. And there's definitely a strong tradition of that in Milwaukee, too. I mean, I think that's part of why the hardcore and punk scenes thrive.
And this DIY epic is also very much part of sort of your ethos and your band Dear Astronauts ethos, as well as your record label, Elmwood Town Records. I've got the name right, haven't I? Do you want to tell us a little bit? Elmwood Town Hall. I apologise. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the reasons why you decided to set up your own label and what you've how that's moving forward at the moment?
Well, the label hasn't really gotten off the ground completely yet. So far, we've just, you know, kind of released our own projects, you know, doing the Dear Astronaut stuff through it, and you know, a couple of side projects. We have a noise collective called Sonic Typewriter. You know, we released that. So far, it's been all CDRs. We're looking to move forward into doing vinyl releases and digital downloads. That sort of seems, I guess, like the most logical, I think, progression for record labels. And just, you know, CDs sort of like, I think people don't really take them especially seriously anymore. What's good about them is they're super cheap to make, especially CDRs. But even like getting, CDs replicated and pressed, it's still cheap. So that's definitely helpful for a smaller label like us. But, we're going to be releasing, 7-inch for Dear Astronaut, this fall or early winter. And, we're kind of hoping that that will help us be able to release more vinyl. It kind of seems like in the scenes that we're in, there's a lot of, I guess, record collectors and people who are really into 7-inches and LPs and stuff like that. I think that will help make it more sustainable as well.
Keeping it sustained is obviously very important. Are you connected to the other bands and you seem to know the scene quite well? Is it very important to support it? Do you find it very important to support other acts and even the ones you maybe musically you're not completely on the same page with, but because you're local, because you're all in the same boat together, it's very important to support each other.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think that the scene could be maybe, more unified than it is, but I think it is pretty important, especially because, what we're doing, what Dear Astronaut is doing is kind of, falls outside of the punk and hardcore sort of aesthetic, So, it's even more important for us to be, involved with that so that, we, make those connections with the people doing hardcore and punk and rock and roll and sort of, it's just kind of like, we're musically something of misfits, and being able to be part of that scene is really helpful for us. But I mean, also just in terms of, it's really important to me that, there's a scene in Milwaukee, and that bands are playing shows together and that, people are friends with each other, even if, there are plenty of bands that I'm not super into, but I'm friends with the people that are in them, and I will support their bands because I think that that's important. I think it's important to keep this scene as strong as we can.
Of course. And the do-it-yourself and all of you taking care of each other, that was in itself is a political statement of sort of keeping the powers in grassroots. But what about politics within the music? Is there a great deal of that in Milwaukee?
There's some. It seems like there's actually a pretty decent amount of political hip-hop here. And again, that's not really a scene that I'm involved with, but it is something I'd like to explore some more. As far as, the punk rock scene goes, there aren't a super lot of political bands. There's more political hardcore bands. There's some crust bands that, definitely take sort of a hardline stance on radical politics. That's good that we have that. The scene itself, though, other than sort of like doing it yourself, like booking your own tours, putting out your records yourself, is not super politicized. I think a lot of the basement shows are kind of more based around like going out and socializing and getting drunk and watching bands, So it would be nice, I think, if there were more of a political element. And hopefully that will happen. We're definitely, living in times right now where I think it's necessary and important. We have, I don't know how much I want to get into
sure.
politics, I'm sure everyone listening, probably feels the same way about, the Bush administration as I do.
Fair enough.
It's definitely something that, we need to be fighting against. But, at the same time, I think a lot of the politics in punk rock right now are kind of partisan almost. They're kind of, it's more liberal rather than radical. And I would like to see a move back towards radicalism where we're saying, Bush is a bad president and a lot of terrible things are going on right now, but, we need to be, taking a look at the Democrats, too, and the whole political system and seeing how that's affecting people. I think for better or worse, the punk rock scene, which, was fairly anarchist in origins, isn't especially so now. And I would like to see a return to that personally.
In regards to the future and more specifically the future of music curation and consumption, What continued effects do you see the internet having with regards to creating opportunities for underground music to find a larger audience and sort of circumnavigating the major labels?
It's a complicated question. I mean, like, you know, you see that for the major labels, like, record sales are going down considerably, you know. And I think that's going to be helpful for a lot of the indies, and especially the bands that are, like, touring on their own and doing everything themselves, because, you know, there's more of a direct relationship between the people making the music and the people consuming it, for lack of a better word, you know. But it's not as much about a culture of consumption, you know. It's not like you can just, I mean, you can go and download this stuff, but hopefully, you know, you're going to feel that it's worthwhile to support these artists. You know, you think about, you know, some of these artists that are on major labels, you know, generally you think like, oh, you know, they're millionaires, you know, they don't need any more of my money. But I think, you know, to make the punk rock scene or whatever, you know, whatever it is, the underground music scene, to make it sustainable, you know, it needs to be supported. And that's why I think sort of the move towards releasing things on vinyl and doing digital downloads is important, because it's kind of, you know, I think it's more appealing to people that way, and it's more of a sustainable system than, you know, the CD that can just be ripped and downloaded and whatever else. So I guess that's kind of what I would like to see, is a move toward vinyl releases and, you know, digital downloads.
Okay, well, we'll move on to some of the music that you've sent to us that we'll be playing on the show. Could you just give us a little summary or a few words about each of the bands that we've been talking about that we'll be playing?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of them. I guess I'll talk about a couple things real quick. Dear Astronaut, which is my band, there's three people in the band. We're doing kind of doomy, dirty, swamp core stuff right now. You know, it's not especially happy music, you know. It's pretty dark, you know. Obviously we have fun doing it or it wouldn't be worth doing, but you know, there's definitely a sort of aesthetic there that I guess is kind of goes against some of the other bands in the scene, I guess, who are a little bit more concerned with, you know, the whole experience being fun and you know, music that you get drunk to and just have lots of fun at the shows. And I've no problem with that. Some of my favorite bands in the scene, you know, that's what they're about. Bands like Holy Shit, who are one of the, you know, I guess bigger, you know, there's scare quotes around that, bands in the hardcore scene. You know, they're very much about, you know, having fun and getting drunk. As far as other bands that are around right now that I really like and that we'll be hearing on the show, there's a band called Pigs on Ice who've just started up, who are absolutely fantastic. They're doing kind of a post-punk sort of thing, like the Birthday Party or the Fall, but definitely, you know, their own take on it. There's bands like, and there's some indie rock bands like bands like Brief Candles, who are doing really interesting things. Yeah, you know, so there's a band called the Catholic Boys, which they are no longer a band, but they're a really, really great garage rock sort of band from Milwaukee. They toured extensively and released some really, really great records. A hip-hop act called Universal Mind, who is doing some really great stuff, you know, kind of backpacker hip-hop, I guess. But, you know, the rhymes are pretty fantastic. There's a new band called Farms in Trouble who I'm really, really digging. It's made up of some members of other local bands, the Candeliers and the Trusty Knife and a couple others. And they're doing this fantastic sort of like lo-fi, weird pop stuff, you know, kind of like some of it's kind of reminiscent of maybe Guided by Voices. They definitely have a real like sort of rock and roll thing going on. I think they're absolutely fantastic. We're going to be playing a show with them really soon. I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool.
The other guys in my band are also in a band called Partisan, who are sort of like a psychedelic folk sort of thing, with a little bit of a like prog influence. They're another one of the Milwaukee bands that are kind of not really, you know, sort of on the sidelines, like not really part of any particular scene, and sort of like don't get, I think, the attention they deserve. Same with Shadow Happy, which is a fantastic, fantastic band. It's my friend Seth doing just kind of like shoegazery sort of stuff. It's all just him playing everything at shows. He plays a guitar and he has a synthesizer that he plays with his feet. And, you know, it's pretty fantastic. There's a lot of some of the other bands in like the punk and hardcore scene, bands like Lewis Tully and Truth Dealer. You know, their bands, Cougar Den, you know, their bands have been around for a little while and doing some pretty interesting stuff. And there's, you know, some of the bigger hardcore bands like Get Rad, who, you know, are kind of doing a Minor Threat sort of style, you know, but definitely, doing something that's interesting and a lot of fun. You know, they're a really great band to see live.
Okay. Well,
so, yeah, I mean, that's just some of the scene, I guess.
Well, that's great. Well, we'll end it there. Is there any final message you'd like to send out to the viewers, or the listeners, who are mostly Nottingham-based, but send a message to Nottingham from England?
Well, Nottingham, you know, support Milwaukee, I guess. You know, if you like the stuff that that you hear tonight, you know, check out these bands, and you know, we'll return the favor, you know, and support your local music and. And, you know, be involved with politics, and this is all sounding kind of cheesy, I think, but I'm not bad with the final message, I guess.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jeb. You're an absolute star, and I'll speak to you sooner or later, I'm sure. Thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you very much, Tom.
All right, cheers. See ya.
Bye.
I was looking for you, but you must have already left. You will always be impetuous. One, well, it was getting dark there in the woods when they found your body. Couldn't bring myself to look the way your limbs went limp when they picked you up. We let stuff to one side. We'll be right back.
was thinking of you and the way your legs felt. We're all just animals. The way we're all just animals. The way we're all just animals. The way we're all just animals.
And that was The Black Lake by Dear Astronaut, another fucking intense song by those guys. The next person I spoke to was Eric Sperling, who's a member of and founding member of the Progressive Student Organisation over in Milwaukee. I started off by asking him basically what his organisation has been doing and a little bit about them.
Well, Progressive Students is a group that formed about maybe only 6 months ago.
Okay.
And we basically are focused on getting our, our soldiers back from Iraq. We have a couple of veterans in our founding members of our organization. People who have served in our armed forces.
Okay.
And so that's our major focus, bringing the troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan as well, although Iraq is a priority.
Okay.
Otherwise, we try to connect students with struggles of working people, such as the immigrant rights struggle here in the United States.
Yeah, I was.
And other housing. There's a lot of housing and something that we call gentrification here. I'm not sure if that's a problem in England too.
It's a problem here as well. Yes.
Yeah. So we try to connect students who would normally maybe have no idea about those struggles. And we try to connect them and connect them to those struggles and get them involved with the community.
And how have you been going about that?
Well, you know, we obviously use a lot of email, and electronic means to get to spread the word. You know, within 6 months, we've gained, over nearly 600 email contacts. And then we also use, you guys probably have Facebook over there too?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, we use these kind of things to promote this stuff. I mean, and then, basically once the information is out there and we tell students that it's going on and we connect them with other students who are interested, then people just turn out because people want to do this stuff, but they just don't know about it. You know, Milwaukee is one of the most segregated cities in the entire world.
I've been hearing this, yes.
Yeah, The Guardian came over here 2 years ago and did a whole massive feature story on Milwaukee.
I remember it, yes.
Oh, okay, you've seen it. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was pretty telling, I mean, that was a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah, Milwaukee is, I mean, really terrible. So that makes it hard to organize across race and class lines. And that's what we view our goal is to connect students who oftentimes are middle class or upper middle class and connecting them with struggles of working people.
So how is turnout here in Nottingham and indeed the rest of Britain? Questions of student apathy often arise because whilst there are many students who are passionately involved, there is still a very noticeable and silent and disinterested majority. I was wondering if there are any differences in Milwaukee, are you getting large numbers?
No, it's the same problem, of course, because these kids are, that's a very good observation and question, because that's the main enemy of our organization is the apathy. Apathy is a huge problem in America. I suspect that it's even a bigger problem here than in England.
Quite possibly, I wouldn't be able to say.
Yeah, because here there's almost a national psychological problem. And, there's a lot of it. I mean, people just absolutely feel like they can make no impact on politics. This election is the first election where students are expected to turn out and make any difference at all. So there is definitely a rise in student activity. But our goal is to make sure that it's directed in the right place. A lot of times there's a tendency for upper class kids to kind of want to do stuff like, the romantic stuff, like fighting cops.
Yes.
I don't know if you ever see stuff like that, if you have that in England. The anarchist groups and stuff who tend to be upper class white kids here.
Yeah, there are some similar things over here, yes.
Yeah, and they, you know, they don't, they're not connected with working people. And they do things like, you know, just fight cops and do really pointless kind of stuff that only privileged kids really can do.
Sure.
And we try to avoid that. We want to take kids and connect them to struggles that and get behind and work directly with working people. And, you know, not try to tell working people how they need to do things or what ideology they need to follow. I think that's what makes us different than most student groups is we, you know, I mean, there is a lot of apathy because, you know, most people don't care what working people are doing. They just want to, like, get drunk. But we're definitely making headway. You know, we're getting people involved, that's for sure.
That's really great. Is it possible for you to give us some more specific examples? Of
yeah, a couple campaigns. I mean, two major things, a couple of examples would be, for example, there's a very big immigrant rights group here in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Called Voces. Do you speak? Called Voces de la Frontera means voices from the border. And it's one of the strongest in the immigrant rights groups of a city this size in the country. And so we work to, a lot of these kids will have no idea about that this stuff is going on, but we try to connect them to it. We took a whole busload of students to the immigrant rights march on May Day, May 1st.
Okay.
And we took a busload of students to that, for example, and then we've connected students with some of the other activities that Voces is doing.
Okay, that sounds great.
And then one other campaign is a problem with jobs here in Milwaukee. We have a very high unemployment rate in the black community. It's over 50% for black males.
Okay.
And we're supporting this this campaign called Good Jobs, Livable Neighborhoods, which is a campaign that aims to. It's kind of complex, but the idea is that it that the money that our city, our tax money, we need to only hire people in the city. Because right now, in Milwaukee, there's a parasitic relationship. The suburbs have a parasitic relationship here in Milwaukee with the suburbs to the city, whereas a lot of city tax money goes to suburban firms and white firms. And so, and meanwhile, there's 50, so we try to connect, we supported that struggle. Gotten students out for their events. They're working on legislation. So
yeah,
in the city council.
I'm planning to speak to someone called Ursula from that campaign.
Oh, great!
So hopefully we'll have more information about that on the show as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could you give us a few more details about the Immigrant Rights March? You've mentioned it already in passing, and I've seen it on your website. I mean that seemed like a pretty huge deal. You had 30,000 people on the march there.
Yeah, that Immigrant Rights March was huge because they have this really successful paper that they use.
Yeah.
And so Milwaukee was one of the biggest in the country, even though we're a relatively small city. So they're a very successful organization, and we tried to bring students out and support that. You know, that's really what our role is more than anything. And then we also host we held a ton of educational events and protests. Those are the main things that our group does by itself. We organized a panel of Iraq veterans last December, I believe.
Okay.
And it was all veterans that had just come back from Iraq, and we have it on tape. If you want to see it, if you want to see the video, you can see that. It's very powerful.
That would be great. Yeah. Again, I'll get those details off you at the end, but I would like to see that. We can try and describe it to the.
Yeah, it's a really amazing event, and they, you know. And then we hold, you know, a lot of other speakers and things and just try to raise awareness, basically. And then we also go out and demonstrate, of course.
Of course. Just to give the people who are listening a sort of a better sense of what is the situation in Milwaukee as far as immigrants are concerned. I mean, when the march was taking place and you asked the immigration rights bill, what was being asked for? And
They were demanding that we have immigration reform in the first 100 days of office. That was their specific demand.
I mean, what reform would that include?
Well, you know, they want amnesty for people who are living here. You know, that's the main thing that they're looking for is, you know, amnesty for those who are living here, and they want them to stop these raids. Recently, there's been a lot of raids on the immigrant community here where they're, you know, they go into a factory or some kind of store or restaurant, and they just start arresting people.
Okay.
And so they're demanding an end to that. I mean, this is really scary stuff where they're going in and arresting groups of people.
Sure.
This is getting to the point where it's not even remotely close to a democracy. you know, this is getting to be the kind of, it's very similar to Nazi type tactics.
Yes.
You know.
Sure. I mean, we've had a couple of high, very high profile, cases in Nottingham recently with a couple of men who were very much involved in the community and activism, who have been, there have been attempts to deport them, and they've kind of highlighted the issue within Nottingham. But one of the questions that's been asked by a lot of the immigration rights groups is, it best to focus on particular cases, or is trying to talk about the whole issue rather than just individuals? I was wondering if that's an issue that's come up in Milwaukee at all.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely talking, they're not just talking about specific cases. I mean, people are trying to, I mean, they do both. You know, on one hand, they state their demands, and they're very broad demands that are really reasonable. And then on the other hand, they're also trying to respond to this new thing, which are these raids. These raids are fairly new in the last year or two, and they're starting to increase. And so they're doing both. They focus on specific local cases as well as, you know, what the national policy needs to be.
Can you see any reasons why these raids have suddenly started to take place?
Well, actually, you know, every single part of the country right now is basically in a rightward tilt, because Bush is a lame duck president. You know, you got he doesn't have anything to lose. He's got really low approval ratings, and every part of the government is actually basically moving to the right now, and people can't control it at all. You know, and that's because Bush has nothing left to lose at this point. His popularity is about, you know, 25%, and so it's like they're cracking down on immigrants, basically everything, kind of surveillance legislation, things like that.
Sure. Do you think this is invigorating the sort of grassroots activism, and the reason why you're getting such a strong turnout at these things is because of the sort of strong arm tactics of the government is actually encouraging people to come out and get involved more?
Yeah, well, I mean, are you talking about in the electoral sense or in the activist sense?
In both.
In both? Yeah, it's true in both. You know, there's the issue where, you know, a lot of people are getting behind Obama, which is not that bad. That's good, you know, because Obama is much, much better than McCain.
Of course.
But on the other hand, it also we're also seeing an increase in other activism as well, you know, an interest in other things, such as more radical, you know, anti-war organizing, and more radical politics as well. Everything is increasing on that end. The problem is we're seeing an increasingly polarized country now, where there's it's very racially polarized and polarized, you know, between cities and rural areas. So the country is it's at a crossroads right now. Frankly, we have a chance of going progressive, or we have a chance of going to the extreme right if McCain wins. Or, you know.
How do you feel? Are you optimistic about which direction it's going to take?
I think it depends on what's going to happen between now and the election. I mean, we're still waiting to see. Right now, things look good, but the Republicans aren't going to give up that easy. You know, we could easily see, very easily see Barack Obama get assassinated. That would not be surprising at all. I mean, and that's a big fear, because they could frame it like it's a terrorist problem, and then they could use that to lurch us to the right. So,
sure.
But I think we'll have to see. I am optimistic. I think that people want change. You know, I spent the last 2 or 3 months doing voter registration in the Black and Latino community.
Okay.
Because here it's not, you don't automatically get registered. It's a very complex thing to get registered. And a lot of people, of course, working people and poor people don't really know the process. I was with them and, you know, and I was down in the Black and Latino community and with also a lot of poor whites, and everyone is behind Obama.
Really, not wrong.
In the cities. It's overwhelming. It's got to be 90%, you know, something like that. But the problem is in the rural areas, there's a real cultural issue, and these people are very resentful and have a lot of prejudices and hatred for Black people. And it's really, you know, it's hard to say which way the country's going to go at this point. But so everyone needs to get working, you know.
It sounds like you're doing a lot of good work there. So at least
we also focus on a lot of Latin America solidarity.
Okay.
You know, because there's a lot of good things going. You know, that's where all the progressive governments are being elected right now.
Yes.
You know, almost every single Latin American country has a progressive government. You know, almost there's only a couple that aren't.
What does that involvement entail? the links you're building there?
Well, again, a lot of education. See, since our country is so right wing, you know, we can't expect too much of people. Well, our main goal is to try to educate people enough so they're resistant to a U.S. invasion or attack on these countries. Because, you know, Bush has made a lot of threatening statements against Venezuela, especially because it's the richest of all, you know, it's kind of the hub and the core of all of the South American progressive governments. And its wealth makes all the other ones able to succeed as well. You know, because they're all too poor to do it on their own.
Sure.
Essentially. So anyway, so that's the main thing we do, is try to raise awareness so that there's no U.S. attack on Venezuela, basically.
What's the general response of people when you're trying to sort of share this information with them?
Well, you know, typically we have an event, we put out a bunch of flyers, and, you know, people come who are interested.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had a lot of events focusing on veterans, and those are the most powerful events because people really, really get affected. You know, we've had veterans who started off being pro-war. We had one woman, she spoke at our panel, and she spent 2 years in a military hospital because she had hundreds of pieces of shrapnel in her body after she was hit by a roadside bomb. And then she was pro-war when she came to give the talk. And 2 months later, we saw her on Montel, which is a big talk show here. And she was very critical. Yeah. And she was on there, national TV, and she was talking very, very much against the war.
Really?
Because we had put her on a panel with, you know, five other anti-war veterans from Iraq. So, you know, we're definitely making an impact, especially with veterans, in showing them that there's other veterans around, you know, that are against the war, and it's okay to oppose the war, you're not unpatriotic. And I think that's one of our major tasks, is to make sure that people are aware, you know, that people realize it's not unpatriotic to say we should bring our troops home, because that's a major propaganda tool the right has used here.
Well, I think that's a good place to end it. Thank you so much for your time, Eric. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
And now we have a song called Wake Up Call, and it's by Taste MCs.
Just wait, man. Come on. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, it's hot.
Hot as all time.
Stand up when you fall, just a wake up call. Step up your game, cause all these lanes are silent in the sand. Let's rearrange.
It's the wake up call.
For all of y'all, whether you struggle or fall, stand up when you fall. Get out your slumber, get money, count up your numbers. It's the wake up call. Bass hitting harder than thunder, make a wise man wonder. Like damn, how we locked the whole game in one summer. Went from selling marijuana to in and out of the drama. Sticking niggas for product, had to get my shit together. Realizing that I'm a father, and anything I do is reflecting upon my daughter. Days is getting colder, times is getting harder. Best friends killing each other for greed over the dollars. Mother grieving and holler cause he could have been a scholar. I guess it's like Biggie said, more money and more problems. But fuck that, nigga with more money is more problems. We blind to the logical ways that we can solve them, so we cock and spray. And I'll be damned if I'm starving, damn if I'm hitting the block. Police dodging, the streets is talking. Mark of the beast is that was calling. These haters is watching, proving the wrong and only option. Intoxicated off mixing the alcoholic concoctions. It's the wake up call, the wake up call, the wake up call. Step up your game, step up your game.
It's the wake up call,
step up your game. Cause all these lanes are silent in the sand. Let's rearrange.
It's the wake up call.
For all of y'all, whether you struggle
or
fall,
stand
up when you fall.
My music is God manifested over the heartbeat bass drum. Stay on some next shit. Viva Fidel is the people's poet. Recruiting young soldiers for the overthrow. Let's talk more action. Push the street code. Simulate the positive. It's good over evil. This the wake up to get your cake up. Call. Divided we fall and we say free them all.
Wake up and go to school. Education is your tool.
Pay attention is the rule. Getting good grades is a jewel.
Rewards come from righteous living. Fast money sends you right to prison. I hope you make the right decisions. Mistakes constantly made, it's best to learn from. You can steal money, but it's best to earn some. You can flip every day, but it's best to wait. Nothing wrong with practicing abstinence on a date. See, some people give gifts that will last forever. Some women treat their life like they ass is treasure. Some men only see their worth in cars and jewels. Money quickly separates itself from fools. You can skip every day, but you'll get blessed in school. You can be a hothead, but it's best to be cool. Cause in the end, a hothead looks like a jackass mule. Make sure to wear a life jacket if you dip in the pool. Only say these things because I love you. I want to live to see the day when the black man rules. So wake up.
Wake up call.
Step up your game, cause all this lame just out in the sand. Let's rearrange.
It's the wake up call.
For all of y'all, whether you struggle or fall, stand up when you fall. Oh.
That was the Taste MCs with their song Wake Up Call. Early in the week I spoke to Rosemary Harris of the 95 National Association of Women Workers, and I asked her what her organisation was about and what they'd been doing recently.
Okay, yes. 95 National Association of Working Women is a non-profit organisation that has as mission maintaining, building a movement to maintain economic justice for women and families. The organization has existed for almost 35 years. We're about to approach our 35th anniversary of Raises Rights and Respect for Working Women in the United States. It started in 1973 when a group of office workers in Boston, Massachusetts, got together and started to talk about issues that were bubbling to the surface in the workplace. At the time, they really didn't know what to call those issues, but now we know them as sexual harassment in the workplace, work-family challenges, and pay equity. And 9 to 5, this group of women that formed the organization emerged as the national organization dedicated to putting women's issues, working women's issues, on the public agenda. As we approach our 35th anniversary, our mission is still to strengthen women's ability to win economic justice. And if you know anything about American film, the film 9 to 5 with Dart, Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton, Jane Fonda, and Dabney Coleman, a big, big hit, that movie is modeled after the work of those women in Boston who started 9 to 5.
Okay. Could be more specific in that the current programs you've got running, issues are still the same, but what's the, what are the current programs you're working on?
Well, we work to win family flexible policies for working women. All workers need paid time off for routine needs such as a school meeting or a child that gets ill, has the flu, needs to stay home from school. And then for more extensive needs like the birth of a new child or a serious illness of their own or that of a spouse or a child or even a parent. And caring for a sick family member shouldn't mean losing your wages, and it shouldn't mean losing your employment. And it shouldn't mean having to bounce from one low-wage job to another low-wage job. So we advocate for policies like paid sick days, which ensure that workers don't have to choose between working and caring for their families, and what establishes a minimum labor standard, paid sick days for every worker. So right now we have paid sick days initiatives on the ballot in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is where our home office is, and it will go to a vote of the people on November 4th. We've also advocated for paid sick days laws that have been passed in other places, San Francisco and in Washington, D.C., among them. Those places already have policies that say that every worker should have paid sick days. We also have worked to strengthen the Family and Medical Leave Act, which, again, says that we should value families and we should value working women, and what a better way to value them than valuing the commitment to their families. We work on programs that also in other ways ensure family flexibility in the workplace. We just had passed in the state of Colorado, in the Colorado legislature, a breastfeeding act that ensures that employers will provide women who have young children at home who need to be breastfed, infants at home, with the time during the workday, unpaid time, in which to expel milk for their babies. And they have to provide a place for that other than a toilet stall, so that women can continue to fulfill their obligations to young infants as well as to their employers. So that law was just passed in the Colorado legislature. I also want to say about going back to paid sick days for just a moment, 145 countries have laws that guarantee paid sick days for every worker, but the United States is one of those countries that does not. We need paid sick days as a minimum labor standard. We also work to increase funding for child care and for education and training for women who are now receiving TANF or public assistance benefits. And we also work to have better workplace standards for temporary workers and for part-time workers. And all of those things are about how women deal with the workplace. We also work on some larger issues, including eliminating workplace discrimination. And we are doing that right now in Colorado by supporting the No on Amendment 46 campaign. Amendment 46 would change our Constitution and end equal opportunity programs for women, girls, and people of color in Colorado. Right now, there are programs that enable in state education, state hiring, and state contracting women and girls and people of color to have access to information about opportunities, to have outreach and training programs. And if Amendment 46 is successful, all of that would go away. We know that we still need equal opportunity because women in the United States overall still earn only 77 cents for every dollar earned by a white male, white males being the highest wage earners. African-American women and Latinas also have an even larger gap. African-American women earn only about 64 cents, and Latinas about 54 cents for every dollar earned by a white male. There are also gaps for men of color, African-American men and Latino men, as compared to white men. So we cannot have equal opportunity programs go away yet. We have not yet realized Martin Luther King's dream.
Your issues are incredibly important, and I was wondering, how is it you've been trying to get your message out and educate the public? Which areas have you been focusing on as far as methods are concerned?
We have offices in five cities in the United States, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in Denver, Colorado, in Atlanta, Georgia, in San Jose, California, and in Los Angeles, California. We also have members in 200 other cities across the United States. We use technology to get our messages out, email alerts to our members, information to our activists that let them know about our events, about the policies that we're promoting, and then it engages them so that they make the difference. Our organization is really all about allowing, empowering directly affected women to make the change themselves. So if we're talking about an issue that affects women who receive public assistance will use the telephone, will use mail, will use email alerts and other technology to let them know about what's going on and then to bring them out in numbers to show their voice and that their vote matters. We do that routinely across the country. We also have a job survival hotline that provides information on legal rights and on strategies and ways to get involved with 9-to-5 in individual communities. So people can call that hotline as well and get information. And we really utilize the media. We use reaching out to reporters like yourself to let them know about our issues, writing letters to the editor, writing editorial op-ed columns, any way that we can use the print and broadcast media to put our message out there.
You mentioned events earlier on. Could you tell us something about the sort of more recent events and the events you've got coming up in the future that will highlight your causes?
Yes, on November 4th, our primary issue right now, maintaining equal opportunity, will come to a vote of those in Colorado. We are right now across the state of Colorado registering low-wage women and other working women and men so that they can be prepared to vote no on Amendment 46. We've been working on that for probably almost 2 years on no on 46, and November 4th, Election Day, is the day. We also know that with the election for president, the general election for President of the United States, women who make up the majority of American voters must be registered and must have a voice, must vote. And so we're registering women all over the country through our Election Connection campaign, registering them so that they can have a voice in who becomes president of this country, and also registering them so that they can raise their voices and their votes on the issue of paid sick days in Milwaukee, equal opportunity in Colorado, and other issues that affect women all over the country.
Okay, you mentioned the election that's coming up. I've spoken to a few Americans recently about the change that's occurring there, or at least Barack Obama sort of creating a new wave of populism. Do you think he's, if he is elected president, he is enough of a feminist to support your issues? Is he someone that you have faith in?
Well, as an organization, because we are a nonprofit organization, we don't endorse candidates or even speak very much about their platforms. There are IRS rules that we really have to respect because we receive contributions from private sources and we have a protected IRS status. So we don't really comment on the issue, on the candidates, but only on the issues. And so those candidates that support our issues, paid sick days, maintaining equal opportunity and workplace flexibility, they can get their own message out there. We get the message out about how important those things are, and then our members vote their conscience. And believe me, they vote for those candidates who have women-friendly and workplace flexibility-friendly platforms, but we don't really talk about the individuals. We don't care so much about that as what will happen to working women and their families, no matter who ends up becoming the president.
Fair enough. What about the sort of the climate over there? Is it friendly, not just in the political spectrum, but in general day-to-day life? Is it friendly towards the changes you're trying to make?
No. I wish that it were. I wish that men would realize, and particularly white men who hold the power in this country, would realize that, you know, this is 2008. We have long passed an era where white men solely determine the agenda. Women must be at the table. People of color must be at the table. Black women, Latinas, black men must be at the table. Latino men, all of the huge diversity of America, the power must be shared. It cannot be in the hands of only one segment of the population. Does that make, because it's good and fair and right, does that make white men ready to do it? No. They still operate, of course, in their own self-interest, in their own best interest. They make deals in places that women and people of color don't have access to. They do that intentionally. But we, through the civil rights movement, through the women's rights movement, have fought against that kind of old boy network, if you will, have broken the glass ceiling. We see Hillary Clinton rise to being one of the top two contenders of a major party. We see other women who are moving to the forefront, Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, Maxine Waters, Carolyn Kilpatrick. All over the country, we see women who are in political and business leadership. Are there enough of them? No, they're not, because that hasn't been allowed, if you will, by the power structure. We know that we still have pay inequity. We have educational inequity. But slowly and surely, women are making themselves known. We've only had the right to vote for 88 years in this country. And that was even slow, just as African Americans have only really had the right to vote since 1965. So it's taken some time for people to embrace the value and see that they can make a difference. But now that that's happening with the presence of Barack Obama as the first African American Democratic Party candidate, you know, we see some change happening. Is there enough? No. There's only one Hillary Clinton and there's only one Barack Obama. So we still need policies that ensure equal opportunity and workplace fairness. And it's happening slowly, slowly. But, you know, we're here to make this reality for more and more working women and low-wage women and their children. Too many children in America live in poverty. That has to end.
Okay, well, finally, the few Americans who will be listening to the show, or hopefully will be, could you give us some details of how they could get involved in this kind of struggle or what they can do in their sort of day-to-day life to support these causes?
Yes, they can the Internet and visit our website, www.9to5.org, 9to5.org. They can get more information there about our programs, about how we help individuals, about how we change attitudes, and about how we change policy. They can become involved there. They can also contact any of our offices. Our Denver office is at 303-628-0925. And we're happy to answer questions. We also have the Job Survival Hotline. That's an 800 number. 800-522-0925. Accessing any of those would get you to someone who will tell you about how you can become involved in your own community.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I wish you the best of luck with everything
you're doing
in the future. Okay. Well, okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Many thanks to Rosemary there. Now we've got a song called Cow Pies by a band called Universal Mind.
Boss with a beard like Rick Ross, so much dope my lungs grow thick moss. Good morning, I blow with no warning. Take a nap on your guest spot, your LP so bored. Strawberry alarm clocks, roll with crunchy socks. Now I'm on your block, my belt buckle going. Can't make it stop, pull the ripcord, fill the whole city's lungs with toxic shots.
See, I told you, I keep blowing. Middle of the summer, now I got it snowing. Nuclear winter, leave MCs and splinters. My brain works like Lucky Strikes with no filter.
Where you from?
How pie?
Where you at?
Southside.
Like, ooh, I'ma leave these haters with their mouths wide. I'm from the sticks, but I still spit sick shit. So when I say jump, y'all say how high.
Oh you, never seem to know what to do. Or you, living life in a test tube. Oh you, you never seem to know what to do. Or you, living life in a test tube.
Bambo lyrical, no need to get hysterical. Breaking walls of Jericho, no errors that are clerical. Kool-Aid the terrible, spit my own parable. These cats try to paraphrase, but it ain't comparable. These Nazi punks can fuck off. All you other MCs can suck cough. You could listen to my rhymes while you jerk off. Munching on microphones like,
what's up, dog?
Then you get punched like clocks. Bunch of little bitches like soggy bagel jocks. Some kids on stage with dookie breath. Cheeto fingers, Kool-Aid mustache.
I know Jerry's the best.
Tom Selleck marinara. Kool-Aid stash. Cherry flavored Geraldo Rivera. Where you from?
How pie?
Where you at?
Southside.
Like, ooh, I'ma leave these haters with their mouths wide.
I'm from the sticks, but I still spit sick shit. So when I say jump, y'all say how high.
Oh you, never seem to know what to do. Or you, living life in a test tube. Oh you, you never seem to know what to do. Or you, living life in a test tube.
So I stay at large, rolling rusty cars. Breathing so hard, they could hear me on Mars. Ain't much use to chicks, except opening jars. Come with Chinese verses, giving MC SAR. And a bird flu crew, schizophrenic dazers. Grazing daily blazers, eyeballs shooting lasers. Mouth full of razors, blank minds and full pages. Set fire to stages, zookeeper lock my crew in cage. Living in Mill City, shacked up with your moms. Plenty punchlines like a weeknight at the prom. But this ain't a comedy record, rock with no skits. Kids say, well, no shit. Don't mean to be rude, but I eat fried chicken with Jews. And corned beef, I ride with black dudes. Got a callus on my left hand from beating my dick at home. Callus on the right from gripping microphones. Some of the bleed is in your left ear, right into your dome.
It comes back out the right to your deaf ass home.
Peace by shalom. Pothead, see around if I'm not square and if I'm not dead. Signed Captain, Kool-Aid, Mammal, Freak, Jaundice, Woolly Mammoth, Motherfunky, Super Chunky, Hairy Monkey, Middenock, German for Midnight, 5K, Dictated, not Red.
Where you from?
How pie?
Where you at?
Southside.
Like, ooh, I'ma leave these haters with their mouths wide.
I'm from the sticks, but I still spit sick shit. So when I say jump, y'all say how high.
Oh you, never seem to know what to do. Or you, living life in a test tube. Oh you, you never seem to know what to do. Or you, living life in a test tube. Oh, you.
Water. Ooh.
two songs you heard there were Universal Minds, Cow Pies, and that was followed by The Trusty Knife and Firewater. The next person I spoke to was a young woman called Ursula, and she's the representative of the Good Jobs Liverpool Neighbourhoods Programme in Milwaukee.
Hello?
Hi, Ursula, it's Dominic. How's it going?
Sorry about that. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks very much. I know you're part of the Good Jobs Liverpool Neighbourhoods Programme. I was wondering if you could tell us sort of a little bit about that and how it got set up and how long it's been going for, that kind of thing.
2003, we came together as a coalition with some other groups to talk about economic development. I don't know how much you know about Milwaukee, but we have been historically, a workers' city. During the 1900s, the late 1900s, people would come from all over the place just to have our factory jobs. You know, our city is really based on blue-collar work, especially factory work. And then starting the late 1990s and especially the early 2000s, a lot of the big factories that still remain in the city to support working class people either move to the suburbs, into little towns in Wisconsin, or, they move to other countries.
Okay.
So in early 2000, we lost a lot of jobs. One of our biggest factories called the A.O. Smith Tower, the A.O. Tower factory, it just moved, and they had supplied us with about 1.5 million jobs for Milwaukee residents. That was good working wages, and healthcare was involved also.
And high unemployment in the area after that.
Yeah. It's like this problem. Milwaukee is one of the most segregated cities in the United States. And so a lot of white people don't have to deal with unemployment rate. As a group of people, our employment rates are lower. And we usually tend to live around the city or in very small parts of the city. So we're not really inflicted by unemployment as much as black and Latino people. And then black people have the worst unemployment in the city. 60% of the black population is unemployed, and 50% of all people who are unemployed are black men. And then the third part of that puzzle is a lot of new immigrants and a lot of Latino workers. They do get jobs and they are hired. The unemployment rate is not as low as African-American people, but they get paid really, really low wages, work very dangerous jobs, get almost no benefits. So there's a struggle in Milwaukee. A lot of African-American people are really upset because they feel like Latino people are taking their jobs. And then a lot of Latino people feel very, singled out because they are getting jobs, but the jobs are completely horrible,
Sure.
So what we should do is, get together and work as a group.
Okay. And what kind of work have you been doing in the last few years?
Well, we have mostly done policy work. We try to be the bridge between the community and the city government.
Okay. As far as the sort of future work you're doing, the work you're doing at the moment, what's sort of in the motion?
Well, we're really excited right now. We're trying to push this. We usually work through Common Council, which is our city is divided into pieces, aldermanic districts, and then those elected officials go work together. So we're really excited to work with Common Council. And what we're doing right now, what we have been doing since about 2006, is trying to push this ordinance and really gather up a lot of support. This ordinance is called the, we're supposed to have names for that are less controversial than the names. Okay, so we're calling it the Job Creation Ordinance.
Okay.
And this ordinance, we've been working really hard to get together. This ordinance would say that any development in the city that takes $100 million or more of our tax money would have to hire at least 30% city residents, provide them with prevailing wage and on-the-job training. We've been organizing in Common Council. We need at least 8 aldermen to vote yes for it to pass, and 10 aldermen for it to be veto-proof from the mayor. So right now we're about to actually, September 9th, this Tuesday, is our press conference. where we're gathering up our final support, you know, for this ordinance, because Wednesday morning, the 10th of September, we're introducing it to its subcommittee, you know, and are really hoping to push it through. We've been organizing door-to-door in neighborhoods for the past year and a half, having public music events, you know, and just working with people who are really inflicted by job loss.
And what kind of response do you get from the people you you interact with in these situations?
It's actually really funny. I can actually send you some pictures of this, because it's really, really kind of funny. You know, we go around neighborhoods with T-shirts that say jobs, 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 or bright red T-shirts, and they say jobs, jobs, jobs. Mm-hmm. And so many people will come up to us because so many people need jobs. You know, they'll be like, oh, do you have a job? And I'll be like, no, but, you know, and we'll start talking to people about what happened to their community and why, you know, why crime is going up and why people feel so distressed, you know, why certain people are being hit by our recession harder than, you know, than others. And so, overwhelmingly, people of the city, like workers in Milwaukee, really can understand, you know, the problems, especially people of color. Unfortunately, I live in a predominantly white neighborhood, and we went canvassing in my neighborhood. It's white and middle class. Kind of recently, like maybe a couple weeks ago, and because this job crisis is so related to people who work in the city and live in the city, a lot of people in my neighborhood really didn't know what was going on or feel any emergent need for this ordinance. But mainly we have had really positive outcomes. We're really excited for our press conference. We're expecting about 300 people to show up, and then really support the aldermen who are putting themselves out there. You know, this is like a very controversial issue because the developers of the city, they're private contractors, but, you know, they've been giving the aldermen campaign donations for, you know, for years and years and years. And so for these aldermen to say, we want, you know, good jobs for people in the city, we want to do what our constituents are asking us to do, which is make their lives better, you know, it's really powerful for these aldermen to finally stand up against the developers.
Sure. And is that a sort of conflicted interest of the aldermen's one of the biggest struggles you've got as far as getting what you need done?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What are some of the others?
You know, I think communication between different groups of people has been really hard. A lot of communities are really, really isolated. Just trying to bring the Latino, the Hmong, the Black, the White communities together has been really challenging for us. And also, people, you know, feel so disenfranchised. Like, for so long, there a lot of people living in the city haven't had, you know, the type of confidence to feel like they have power to make changes for their life that they know that they need and they need to bring for their children. So a big struggle was, you know, to convince people that we can work with the government, we can make really positive change, we do have power as a community if we all come together. That was one of the hardest struggles. And I think the other struggle was how, like, I guess, sneaky the aldermen are. You know, and how the conversations that they have privately, the aldermen and other city officials, really are about trading votes, and how, you know, and that affects us in a really negative way, because unless we can really ensure that we have some aldermen that are completely on our side, it's a really, really delicate balance as to who we talk to when and how we talk to them and who goes to talk to them. Because we're a coalition, we have a lot of other different groups. We have a lot of labor unions. We have religious organizations. We have city groups. We also have academic, you know, like university-related groups. So when we approach aldermen, we really, really try to figure out, you know, what their interests are and who personally knows them, and then send in a group of people who, you know, can best pressure them, I guess.
Okay.
For example, we just talked to this alderman named David, and he's a religious man, and he goes to the church of one of the members of our organization. So we got a bunch of the clergy members to dress up in their outfits and go talk to them as religious members.
Okay. And as far as sort of bringing the different demographic groups together, what kind of tactics and what kind of ways have you used to bring them, pull them together, rather than have them separate?
We mostly try to do that through events. I mean, a big thing to start, you know, is when we go talk to people in neighborhoods, we really try to engage people in the conversation about, what is actually going on. It's not really that Latino workers are coming into the city and taking jobs. It's not really that, that suburban workers are, coming into the city and taking the jobs individually, but it's really, the dynamic of the developer choosing to hire suburban workers, choosing to hire non-white workers, choosing to hire Latino workers who they can pay lower. I think that's the first step of bringing people together is to initiate that conversation. But also, we have events. In March, we had this event called Rise Up Milwaukee, Rhythm for a Reason. It was this really, really cool concert. We had musicians from all over the place of all different types of music. We had gospel choirs, R&B, soul music. We had reggaeton by world-renowned Quinto Soul. We had hip-hop music by Rhymefest. We really tried to make sure that all ages, a lot of different cultures were, taken care of. And so that was one of our first stakes at bringing, people from all around different parts of the city into one central location to talk about the job crisis, to listen to music, eat good food, just be together. Then we have been having not protests, but gatherings at Common Council. We all wear the red jobs, jobs, jobs shirts, and then go sit by Aldermanic District during the meetings in the Common Council chambers. And so that is another way for people to really see all the different types of people that are inflicted by this.
Sure. And do you feel positive about the things you've been doing, that they've been a success?
Yeah, I think I'm actually really excited. In 2005, when we pushed the Park East ordinance, we had really, really more negative results, and we tried to really learn from our mistakes. And this time, I think the most important success was that we really have worked with the community to really make sure that, actual residents are the main people who are pushing this ordinance. I think the last time we really tried to make sure that it was just our policymakers working with the elected officials, but now we are really, really trying to make sure that city residents are engaged and involved. And it has been so rewarding and so positive to have people who have traditionally been so, just dismissive of city government because, the city government really has not had a really positive role in their lives. So this could be, a turning of a new page in the book, making our leaders at city government more accountable and really empowering people who have not had that power before to say this is what we want in our neighborhoods, this is what needs to change, and I'm excited to see how many people have become involved so far.
And you mentioned the press conference earlier. What else have you got coming up in the future?
So we're having a press conference on the 9th, and then we're having the introduction to the subcommittee on the 10th. In the last month, we've had a lot of different events to bring people together. Also, we had a Steppers Ball. We also are starting this thing called Right to the City, where we're working with major radio stations in Milwaukee to put a contest out to our neighborhoods to have people come up with, the best song or the best rap or the best poem about the job crisis in the city. So, we're really still trying to work with a lot of different community members. And then hopefully, we'll keep those events going until it gets introduced into the regular committee. And we'll still keep going to Common Council every month to wear our shirts and to show our aldermen how important it is. The ordinance should be introduced into the full committee in January. So hopefully by February 2009, we will have the job creation ordinance passed. And the city full of people who, have really started to understand that they can make a change.
Okay. As far as sort of real long term, do you see a sort of a future in which people do have the jobs that they need, or the jobs that can create a sort of livable, a good life for them? And do you see the sort of neighborhoods changing back because of that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've been doing a lot of research, you know, so in other cities that when even a dollar of public tax money goes into a job, you know, like a job creation, then a development, you know, there are a lot of jobs from people in the city are created there, you know, so even $1. So that's our goal. But in Milwaukee, it's been a really, really sad summer. We had a quadruple homicide one weekend. Just last Saturday, yesterday, this guy got severely beaten by the police downtown. They broke his kneecaps and his jaw. And, you know, people, to be in poverty, a lot of petty crimes happen, you know. To have an unstable life is not healthy for our children and for our communities. And so I really feel like these extra 30% of jobs that are good jobs, family-supporting jobs, you know, will help. You know, will help people maintain their lives, and will decrease violence, and will help children feel the family structure they need to get through school. And we hope to, you know, increase that number from just 30% to when any dollar of public tax money goes into a development, then those jobs go to city workers because it's, you know, our money that we're putting into it.
Sure. I'd imagine that a lot of the people listening probably aren't quite aware of how extreme sort of the urban decay is in some parts of some cities in America, including Milwaukee. Could you try and give us some kind of picture of how bad it is in places there?
I think it's like in Milwaukee, because of how many factory jobs we had, especially, you know, during the late half of the 21st century. Sorry. I think because of the, you know, the amount of jobs we had in the 1950s and later, it was like people really got houses that have never owned houses before. People had, you know, like just really, really nice lives. And now because of the loss of jobs, it's just tragic. Like we met this one woman a couple weeks ago, and she was, you know, she went to school. She got 2 bachelor's degrees, and she still works 3 jobs to support her family. And she lives in a neighborhood that is, you know, very poverty stricken, and she deals with, you know, a lot of violence. There's prostitutes that hang out in the park next to her house, and she's like, "What am I supposed to do with my children?" We also, you know, have met this man who has several certifications. You know, to do different jobs, but has been looking for a job for so long. He still lives with his mom. He's 45 years old, you know. And so, like, that's the older generation. It's really a struggle for them to, you know, get jobs, have their own life, just things that are very necessary for humans. And as far as the younger generation, a big outcome of when, you know, younger people don't have jobs is the increase in violence. And it's just, it's not because people are angry or people are stupid or anything. It's really because when you don't have money, petty crimes, you know, come out in this society. And so we do have, our city is like the 7th in the country of highest poverty rates. About 2 months ago, there was this rumor that, FEMA, I think it stands for the federal, it's FEMA. I don't know. They deal with like a lot of disasters. And we had a lot of flooding in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin about 2 months ago. And so there was this rumor that FEMA was coming to give, you know, free food stipends to people. And so at 4 a.m. in the morning, over 100,000 people showed up to receive, you know, to receive food stipends, and 100,000 people were not inflicted by flooding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that's just not what it was about. It was about that we have severe poverty in the city. People are very hungry, and you know, I mean, it's just the quality of life has gone down so much, and it's reflected in people's actions as far as getting free things from the government, and also just generally how many, you know, how many crises we have as a city.
Okay. Well, we'll end it there. Have you got any sort of final words that you'd like to impart on the audience, or anything else you'd like to share with us?
No, I mean, not really. I guess I'm really excited for our ordinance. I hope, you know, that it passes on Tuesday, and I want to send out, you know, a lot of love and support to anyone else who is dealing with similar issues and who is, you know, trying to make better change in their community, too.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, and it's I wish you the best of luck with all the things you're doing. And thank you very much.
Okay,
goodbye. There we had Pigs on Ice with a digital launch, and that was followed by the Candeliers, Some Zenith Time. And now I'm going to speak to Mike Kellybeck from Peace Action.
I started out in activism in the Young Communist League when I was about 18, 19 years old, and that was mainly based at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And from there, I was able to meet the Peace Action people, which is an organization of the community, and I started to attend their events and learn from them and ended up joining up, and now I am on their board.
I see. Peace Action, I hear, has been around for quite a while. It's not just a recent thing. It's got a bit of history behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it started, I forget the exact year, but it was in the 70s. They actually started out as an advocacy group against nuclear weapons and for nuclear disarmament. And from there, they kind of evolved into kind of dipping into all kinds of movements of social justice and issues.
I see. I imagine at the moment, though, most of Peace Action's work has been taken up with what's going on in Iraq. Could you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing recently?
Sure. As far as the war in Iraq goes, we've got, I believe it's actually an international thing, but in Milwaukee it's gotten pretty big. It's called the Iraq Moratorium. Every third Friday of every month, we have a gathering at the most busy intersection downtown. And we have different groups. We have everyone from Vets for Peace, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Peace Action, Progressive Students of Milwaukee, and a group Kids for Peace, which is a group of elementary school kids from a bilingual school in the area. And we get together downtown, and we have a demonstration for an hour, and it's really great because we remember 5 years ago when we were sitting on the corners, nobody would honk their horns for us. You know, the war was very popular, but now everyone's honking their horns. We say, honk for peace, and everyone does it. So it's really energizing. It's a lot of fun. Aside from that, we've been working specifically with anti-war work, doing counter-recruitment work, in the form of providing alternatives to military service, access to counseling. We've had vets panels where we've had panels of Iraq veterans speak, panels of Vietnam veterans speak. We feel that's the best way to get the message across to the public, because when you hear those are stories, you can't really turn away from that, and that's not covered by the media. We think that's very powerful.
Of course. Is there a visible or a change in public opinion that you can sort of feel at the moment over there, which doesn't get reported?
Oh, definitely. I think you can just feel the public opinion. I mean, people come up to you. It used to be we'd get maybe, you know, more middle fingers than waves even, but now, you know, everybody's thanking us. The people who are walking by are thanking us for being there, the people in their cars, you know, and all different kinds of people, you know, people driving by in nice cars, businessmen who are done with their day, or just, you know, kids from the inner city driving by. They're all excited about it and against the war. So we really feel like the mainstream anti-war movement has made a difference in the United States over these past few years.
You say the Iraq moratorium is a worldwide sort of thing. In Milwaukee, how did you go about sort of building support and...
Okay. As far as the Iraq moratorium, we've used a number of different methods. First of all, it's kind of a coalition that that is at the moratorium every week, and Peace Action is kind of made up of members from a lot of different groups, like different veterans groups, or student groups, or what have you. So each group kind of advertises in their own way. Peace Action has a newsletter. I believe it's bi-monthly. I'm sorry, bi-weekly. And so they get the word out that way to all their members. Progressive Students use Facebook, which has been growing, to make events on Facebook. You send it out to, you know, thousands of people, and it's really been helpful. We've seen attendance increase a lot by using Facebook and other online.
Do you think the new technologies is an area which activists can still, they're using, but do you think they could utilize it better, and it's certainly an area which could be expanded upon in the future?
Yeah, I think it's been a big struggle for a lot of activist groups, and also Peace Action, just moving into the new technology and the new way of doing things, and especially since peace action has been around since the time of Vietnam, so the tools at our disposal are a lot different, and it's been kind of a, we've been trying to kind of evolve at peace action into using different forms of emails, different formats to send out to our members, taking donations online, all kinds of things like that.
Okay.
Like I said, promoting events online as well.
Sure. So what are your plans for the future? Are there any sort of other campaigns that will be brought into this? Or?
Sure. Specifically with anti-war work, we're going to be continuing the Iraq moratorium every month, and we're excited for the school semester to start and for the students to come back and be involved in that again. And we're also setting up in conjunction with a couple of other groups in the city, a vets panel to speak in early September, probably combine Vietnam vets and Iraq war vets to talk about parallels that they see in the wars and kind of give a historical perspective that way. But also, we'd like to set up a vets panel of all female soldiers, because we think that the experience of women in the military and in the war, the experiences are unique to men. They face different problems, different kinds of stress and harassment and whatnot. So we'd like to really give women in the war a voice as well. So we'll be doing that in September as well.
That sounds really interesting. Well, that's the end of my questions. Have you got any other information that you'd like to sort of tell people about, or anything that we haven't covered so far?
Like sort of my message to the world right now, huh?
I think so, yes. It's your spotlight in the sun sort of thing.
Well, I guess, we're just going to keep working. We're going to keep trying to find new ways to spread the message, keep using the media, keep building our grassroots groups, keep working in coalitions around the city and around the country. I think that we're on a good path, and we see it growing all around the country. So,
okay.
Yeah, we're just going to try to keep up the work.
That's certainly a good message to send out there. Okay, then. Well, thanks for your time. I'm going to end the interview, but I'm going to have a word with you afterwards. But thank you very much, Mike. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, the most unusual, novelty act.
Yeah. Just listen. Yeah. Long time coming and shit, right? Word. House of M.
Yo, as we look up on the game and the state of hip-hop, tick-tock, the clock ticking, plot digging, but we hot missing with no pot to piss in. We stayed optimistic and single-handedly overcame our opposition. Obstacles, our profit grows, they got the coal. I'm more focused with more money, there's more locusts, more leeches and more stakes and more fakes. But just wait, you get ate like some corn flakes. We only doing it cause you niggas are doing it, somehow ruined it. But it's just hip-hop and y'all flip-flop. In the meanwhile, we chewing this. Y'all just losing it, man. Straight abusing it. And hood music don't mean good music, my nigga. Instead, my rhymes hood, cause they go over your head. Like that one, so figure that one and get that, son. You that dumb or am I that dope, nigga?
Hey, Kevin, who is this dude, man?
Man, Gambit is hot, son. Man, Gambit is representing
the House of M, man. Where you come from, man?
I'm telling you, man, that's
awesome.
The sun is hot, son.
House of what?
I'm telling you, House of M is hot.
Nope. It's a little bit of both, just a little kid with hope. Who would've thought it happened? Me? Get caught in rapping? I was a little bit broke, a little bit of a joke. Just 8 years old in a starter jacket. Ha, and still a little bit broke. Still a little bit of hope for us to blow. And no, I don't appeal to the hoes. I'm too real with the flow. I don't make club songs and then wait until my bus gone. So what's wrong with hip-hop is what's gone. Staying true and doing you and having much fun. We did our job, we could just touch one. Cause being MCs don't mean you gotta bust guns. Not content with our position on a never-ending mission to bring back what hip-hop's been missing. Listen, I mean that. In fact, it's my addiction, just like Greenback and Marvel Comics side fiction. Nigga, listen.
Ooh,
just listen.
Yeah, hold that shit hot, man. Hey, I was wrong, man. Off the head, man. My bad. Hey, I need every second.
We call ourselves mutants cause we different than y'all niggas, man. We different, we flyers, we got more
niggas,
we better than y'all niggas,
man. Yeah, we get more teeny than y'all niggas,
yeah, yo shit.
Word up.
Word up, son.
Yeah,
we'll take your girl.
Word.
Prime.
Dylan Thomas,
C-C,
Luke Kane, F. Dort, Unified Records,
here we go,
Professor X,
X,
you know what I'm saying, Trailmatic,
Trailmatic,
yo man, Dana Copper,
Dana Copper,
he's King L,
right.
Yeah,
you walk down, man, we hard as thing, baby,
yeah,
hard as thing,
yeah. Milwaukee, Wisconsin,
yeah, so all you lame ducks, this is a message,
yeah.
Woo.
Just listen.
Open up your ear holes, motherfucker.
And that was a Gambit MC Ultra with Birth of a Hero. That pretty much wraps it up for this month's issue. I'd like to thank Rosemary, Ursula, Mike, Jeb, and Eric. I hope you've all enjoyed what they've had to say, or at least found it interesting. I know I have, and I hope to hope you'll all join me next month when we're in New Zealand, I think. I hope. And I'm going to leave you with a couple of songs. One is by Lefty Lucy, which is called Wasted, and the second will be Catholic Boys' Temper Tantrum. Thank you. Take care. Goodbye.